morning. You're listening to Glenn Coble on It's a Passive Life. And I'm kind of tired today. My little puppy dog kept me up again at night. And that's the news flash that follows that music. That music is kind of strange. I always think I'm going to have to do some newscast or something when I hear that. It wakes me up, though. I hope you've had a good week. One of the things I'm going to talk about today, well, a couple of things. As you know, I've been getting into the Mueller report. I'm now about 90% done, and I will go into that a little later. But the first thing I was going to talk about today is, you know, the end of this week on the 16th is Father's Day. Now, I didn't do anything on Mother's Day, and I'm really sorry. I had a wonderful mother. I just didn't think about it. But I thought maybe today I happened to listen. I was listening to my music while I was showering and dancing with my father. I think it's either Boys to Men or Luther Vandross. I'm not sure who sings it, but I heard that and I thought, I really would like to tell the world about how wonderful a father I had. And I think I'll go over a little bit about my father. My father was... As I've mentioned before, a Methodist minister. I was born in Indianapolis, and I know where the church is that Dad was the minister, but I was only there for a year, so I don't remember much about that. And then his assignment was Crawfordsville, Indiana, which is down kind of southwest of Indianapolis. And we were in Crawfordsville for, about 6 years. I think most of Dad's assignments were 6 years. It was kind of a standard thing within the Methodist Church that every 6 years you got moved. But we were there in Crawfordsville, Indiana, which, by the way, is the home of the Lew Wallace study. And I think Lew Wallace wrote Ben-Hur, I believe. Anyway. The Dad was also an English professor while there at DePaul University. Not DePaul. DePaul is where I was assistant athletic director for 5 years. DePaul is a school in Crawfordsville, and that's where he taught. Thus, I was not allowed to speak with bad English. And I was brought up, and I think I mentioned this, but I even remember my very first phone number when I lived in Crawfordsville, and my phone number was 210. That was my phone number. I don't know why I remember that, but I do. My very first memory of life had nothing to do with my dad, but it did have to do with his mother, Grandma Coble. somehow or other, at age 2.5 or 3, got into the 1949 Ford that we had in the garage. Somehow I got in the garage, got inside the car, and let the emergency brake off. Excuse me, and crashed through the door because it was on the driveway was on an incline and drove rolled all the way down and ran into the side of the house, and Grandma Coble came running out and picked me up off the ground because I had fallen out of the door, and that was my very first memory of life. I had a few memories from Crawfordsville. I remember. Getting measles. I remember getting a really high fever and having some sort of I saw things crawling over the top of my bed, which was kind of scary. I remember getting nightmares from Being a little guy, I was probably 3 years old, maybe 4 years old, and I got a helium balloon, and I went out back, and it was wrapped around my hand, and I accidentally let go, and I remember running in and asking my mom to get a ladder so we could go get it. By the time we got back outside, it was just a speck in the sky. I remember one of my very first birthday presents was a steam shovel that my brother gave to me, who was 8 years my senior. And so he was about 10 or 11 years old at the time, maybe 12. And I broke it immediately. That's why I remember it, I guess. And I remember snow on Halloween. I think it was in the last year we lived in Crawfordsville. I don't know what this has to do with my father, except for my father got us there. And Dad was a rather liberal Methodist minister. Methodist ministers were liberal back in that day than they are now, I believe. And I remember always seeing my dad. He had an office in the parsonage, and he was always in that office, and quite often talking on the phone or talking to somebody that you could tell was in distress. I always respected Dad because he could talk to people that were in distress and stay cool and calm and yet have a lot of empathy for them. After Crawfordsville, we moved to, where did we move? Oh, we moved to South Bend, Indiana, home of Mayor Pete Buttigieg. And he was not alive at the time, by the way. But we moved to South Bend, Indiana. And I remember the church that Dad got in South Bend was South Bend St. Paul's. One of the most beautiful churches, well, definitely the most beautiful church my dad ever was in. It was built by the Studebakers, the people that owned the car company. But prior to the car company, the Studebakers owned a carriage company and built carriages for horses and that sort of thing. And but by the time we left South Bend, they were building the Lark. Probably the thinnest metaled car I had ever heard of. Larks were not considered a big, standard, tough guy, big car. They were pretty small. They were probably one of the early small cars in the United States, if not the early small car. Well, no, there were midgets. I don't know if you know anything about the midget that was built down in Athens, Ohio, which was smaller, and probably built before the Lark. But those were really small cars. Anyway, so we lived in South Bend at the corner of LaPorte and Colfax, if I recall correctly. That's where the church is, and we were right next to it. The church that Dad had was had beautiful, I mean, absolutely gorgeous stained glass windows. And if you get online and pull up South Bend St. Paul's Church, I think they have a photo set that shows some of their windows. But one of the windows, the biggest window, which is in the sanctuary, must be 40 feet tall. Maybe 30 feet, but it's very, very, very big. And there were all sorts of things that Mr. Studebaker brought to the church to make it a more desirable church, desirable for the well-heeled, I guess. He had the baptismal font was actually taken from the Acropolis over in Greece. It was not initially a baptismal font, but that's what they turned it into. The organ was gigantic, a German organ built by Germans who couldn't speak English, from what I was told. So it was kind of an interesting installation. It was installed way before my dad got there, but it was considered a phenomenal organ. There were all sorts of windows in all the different rooms throughout the church that depicted the parables. That's really how I learned about the parables as a kid. Dad was good at, he fancied himself an actor. Now, maybe some of this stuff is starting to sound familiar because I was an actor for a short period of time. Dad loved the dramatic, and we had plays in the church service all the time. He was a very creative person. I'm honored to be his son, and I've tried all my life to be as good a father to my children as he was to me, but I don't come anywhere close. But I hope when I pass that they think of me with as much respect as I have for my father. And I hope you have respect for your father. I grew up with kids whose fathers were pretty rough on them. And I understand that sometimes it's tough to have a father like that. I don't know why it's usually the father that's rough on them and not the mother. But my mother was a saint. I know you're all saints. So was my mom. My mom was truly a saint, and my sister was just like my mom. Now my brother, that's another story. John was, he liked to refer to himself as respectable hood. Back then, hood was like being a gangsta. Anyway, we lived in South Bend the first 6 years. Dad was the minister at St. Paul's. And Dad was kind of on the fast track to become bishop of the Indiana, whatever it's called, in the Methodist Church. And so he was promoted. We were in South Bend. I was going to South Bend Central High School, which is no longer, but at that time, along with Crispus Attucks, South Bend or Indianapolis Crispus Attucks, those two schools were the producers of the finest athletes you had ever heard of. Oscar Robinson, I believe, went to Crispus Attucks. We had a lot of nationally famous high school basketball players and won the state championship. Matter of fact, if you ever watched the movie Hoosiers, the team that loses to, I can't remember the name of the small school, but that team supposedly is South Bend Central. Now, I think I've mentioned this on an earlier show, but that my sister went to that game. My sister was 10 years my senior and went to the game where South Bend Central played that school. It starts with an M, small school. Anyway, but it was that was not in the championship game like they made it to seem on in the movie. It was the semi. It was the game right before the championship where those two teams played. They actually played Muncie Central in the championship game. But Muncie Central was predominantly white. Matter of fact, I would say 98% white school. And South Bend Central was 33-34% black when I went there and when my sister went there. And still is. Well, I mean, South Bend is about 35% African-American. Anyway, or non-white, let's say that. I'm not sure whether it's 35% African-American. But anyway, my sister went to the game and got to watch that. And we talked about it after Hoosiers. And she said they made it well more dramatic than the game was. But anyway... John Wooden actually coached at South Bend Central for a while. So anyway, let's back to my father. Dad was noted as a very liberal Methodist minister, as I said before, and he was on the fast track to become, hopefully become a bishop. I guess it was hopefully for him. And so they promoted him to district superintendent of the South Bend District. Now, before that, my father was condemned by the John Birch Society as being a communist. Don't ask me why they decided that. I never, ever heard a political thing out of my father except for that he was a Republican. And he was not terribly political, but he did participate in several civil rights marches and events, and truly believed in the rights of all men. Again, you're kind of hearing my father in my speech and the way I feel. Anyway, just checking the clock because I just noticed my clock says it's 7:10. I don't think that's correct. Anyway, so Dad got to be a district superintendent of the South Bend District. So we had to move. And they moved us to a house, maybe a block away from where we had been living when we were at South Bend St. Paul's. So it was kind of nice, but I got to stay at the same high school. So I stayed at that high school until I was just as a freshman. Let's see, in South Bend Central, it had 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and through 12th. So if you went there in junior high, you stayed there all the way through high school. And so I was there till the 9th grade. And then Dad got they bought us a new house. So we had to move across town. And by moving across town, we moved to the ritzy area out by Notre Dame. And back in those days, they wouldn't allow you to bus to your school. So I had to change high school. So we moved from South Bend Central High School to South Bend John Adams High School. And I kind of messed up my German studies going from one teacher to the next. But I was lucky enough to keep on participating in sports at both schools, South Bend Central and John Adams. And then after we were at after I was at John Adams for about half a year, they decided that they were going to give Dad an even higher position. So they were going to make him superintendent of the Valparaiso, Indiana district, which included all the East Chicago, all the bigger city churches right bordering on Chicago. And we had to move again. So within 11 months, I went to South Bend Central, South Bend Adams, and then moved to Valparaiso High School. Kind of a mess, but it was good for Dad, and we loved our father. I even think my brother loved my father. He just didn't know it. Dad was very active in positive things for his parishioners. He was constantly helping, like I said, in civil rights. I remember that we took in people that were that didn't have any money. We would give them; they'd stay in our basement. And Dad, Mom was a member of the Goodwill Auxiliary, and she'd go find them clothes. And we helped a lot of people that way, which I guess also led to my rather liberal bent. Even though Mom and Dad were Republicans, I like to refer to my father as a Eisenhower Republican. And if you know about Eisenhower's philosophy, you'll know that he would be considered an outlier today. However, my grandfather and grandmother were both very staunch Republicans. My grandfather used to have tirades about the horrible things that FDR had done. And he would tell my father things, and my father and my grandfather would argue about it at the dinner table. But you weren't allowed to argue too much at the dinner table. My grandfather, at my grandfather's house, he had a maid and a butler. He was a very wealthy doctor. And by the way, that did not translate down to his grandson. We had to wear coat and tie on Sundays when we ate at the house, at Grandpa's house in Indianapolis, or on Christmas or any other holiday that we were there. We had to wear coat and tie. And that's the way Grandpa's life was, kind of a strict Republican life. And my father, I guess, in his rebellion, became an Eisenhower Republican. I was a Republican until I was until Nixon, quite frankly. So anyway, Dad was a wonderful human being, and I hope you all have wonderful fathers, and I hope you remember them this coming Sunday. A lot is said about Mother's Day, but not a whole lot is said about Father's Day. It's kind of a passing thought on TV or in the news. Oh, by the way, Sunday is Father's Day. And you don't go and buy your father a dozen roses or any or a box of candy or chocolate or anything like that. I can't remember that we ever did anything for my father on Father's Day. Matter of fact, I'm not so certain that Father's Day was on the calendar when I was young. I will look that up and try and remember that and tell you next week, maybe. So anyway, as my father was then promoted, which we assumed was the next step till he was going to become bishop, he was promoted to the superintendent of the Kokomo District, I believe it was. And by that time, I was married and living away from my parents, and I actually had a baby, and fortunately, my father got to meet my baby, Christopher, who is now like 46 or something like that. But 1 year after Christopher was born, my father died of he had a stroke, which led to being in the hospital for quite a while, and then ended up dying from that. And it was kind of sad. And that's why I have to, I had a heart attack, and I have to be very careful on cholesterol and all that stuff. And that's why I walk every day, just to try to keep myself alive a little bit longer. Anyway, that's about all I have to say about my dad. I hope, Dad, as you all know, I'm atheistic, which means I'm not really believing that my dad is up in heaven right now. I believe my father is stardust, and I hope that stardust is floating somewhere that's beautiful. Not that he'll know, but I really miss my dad. I miss him probably once or twice a month, I think about him. I don't, contrary to what people say, oh, I think of my father, or I think of my mother, or my brother who has passed away, I think of them every day. Well, I find that really hard and kind of tedious to listen to. I don't think after they've been dead, Dad's been dead for a long time. He was younger than me when he passed away, so it's been a long time. Well, 45 years, 44 years, whatever my son is, 1 year shorter than that. Anyway, after that amount of time, you stop thinking daily about him. Now, I did think, I'm sure I thought about him daily for a few weeks or a few months, but life goes on. We all have to move on. Not that you're happy that it has to go on, but it does continue on, and it only does you harm if you wallow in the agony of some of the bad things that happen to us. We all have bad things happen to us, so don't wallow in them. Well, anyway, let's get off of that. Let's go on to what's been happening in the political news lately. I'm absolutely positive not very many of you people are doing what I'm doing. I'm getting through the Mueller report. I now have finished about 90% of it. I believe that if you would read the Mueller report, you would be interested in impeaching the president too. I thought maybe I'd talk about the impeachment idea. I don't want to, you know, impeaching doesn't mean you get rid of the president. It just means that you indict him, and then it has to go to the Senate, and the Senate votes him out if they're going to do that. Now, I don't believe that's ever happened in our history. We've impeached, I think, three, but I don't think we've ever I don't think the Senate has ever found any of them guilty. I may be wrong on that. But anyway, there's no possibility with Mitch McConnell, who has blocked everything. Any Democratic Congress has ever wanted to do, and I guarantee you he will block that. I mean, if he can block the appointment of a Supreme Court judge for almost a year, he can certainly block impeaching Trump. So I'm not counting on that happening, but it's raised a lot of interesting questions. Should you impeach, or is it better not to impeach if you know you're not going to win? And that's the problem that the Democrats are having right now. I don't believe that they will ever solve that question. The chances of them ever getting a Senate to vote the president out are probably slim and none, and slim is leaving town. The opportunity to impeach is one thing, but the requirement to impeach is another, and that's what a lot of people are arguing about now. And quite frankly, I don't know what the right answer to this is. I am a realist and do believe that there's no way he would be convicted by a Senate that's as jaded and controlled as a Mitch McConnell Senate would be. But I also think that the Democrats ought to get a pair, if you'll excuse the expression, a pair of shoes, of course, and do what is constitutionally expected of them, and that's to move toward impeachment. You don't have to say you're going to formally impeach the president, but you can start the inquiries. And I think that's kind of what they're starting to do. Maybe today, I think maybe tomorrow, they're going to have John Dean speak to them. the president has not allowed anybody from his former or current staff to honor subpoenas, which I always thought were a violation of the law. And in my opinion, if they do not answer the subpoena, I truly believe they ought to throw them in jail. Hope Hicks, McGahn, I think they ought to throw them in jail. Maybe to shake their brain up so that they know they're doing something that's against the law. Now, if you believe in breaking the law, there's a lot of that going on right now. And when I'm reading the Mueller report, I'm in the section where they're talking about the different parts of... let me get to my little section on Oh, my. I'm trying to find the section on my phone that tells me what I was going to talk about on this. There are three things that they try to do to prove there is obstruction. And one of them is there must be acts that obstruct, acts of obstruction, corrupt acts, not accidental acts. They have to be corrupt, and that means the people had to know that they were doing something that was going to obstruct the movement of the government. There has to be a connection between the suspect or the person or the group that did this obstruction. There has to be a connection between that and the act itself. You have to be able to say they honestly didn't tell somebody this so that that person wouldn't be able to testify to it. And I'm just making that up. That's just one thing. And then they have to show that the acts, there were actual acts of obstruction. I mean, they actually did it. They got away with it. And the section I'm in right now is going through, I think there are 10, maybe 12 acts of obstruction. And the Mueller report goes through and explains all three parts and doesn't make a judgment on it. Now, I think you've probably heard the news. The reason why it doesn't make a judgment is because Mueller believed that he was not allowed to make indict the president, a sitting president, by Department of Justice rules. So therefore, he couldn't say that the president was guilty of this. All he could do, and he also knew that if he had said the president was guilty, then he would be judging him before he had a case in court, which he didn't believe was right, and I don't either. But anyway, looking at, well, I kind of lost my train of thought there. The obstruction in the 10 to 12 cases, he goes through and he explains what the obstruction was, what the connection was, and also whether there actually was an act of obstruction. But he doesn't judge whether it's legal or not legal. He leaves that up to the reader, or as apparently was the case, he leaves that up to the Congress. And if the Congress doesn't impeach, they have no way of saying this was illegal. So that's kind of where we are right now. They're kind of trying to, and I believe the Democrats are afraid of going too fast for fear the chance of witch hunt will get way loud. But if you read the Mueller report, and please do, apparently only 3% of the American public has. And let me tell you how you can do it. If you get on Amazon, if you're an Amazon member, you can get the Mueller report free of charge. I think it's 19 hours long, but you can get it free of charge on your, you know, as a audiobook. 19 hours. It's a long, big, long report. 460-some pages, I think. Anyway, I wish that you could read it, because it will leave absolutely, and I mean absolutely, no doubt in your mind that this particular administration is guilty of many things. They're not only guilty of laws, but they're guilty of a lack of morality. I'm sure the Mueller report is honest, or at least tried to be honest. Now, I know that there will be people that say, no, it's not. But there's always people that try to cast dispersions upon anything, especially if it's against what they want to get forwarded in the government. But I cannot believe that you can read the Mueller report and not think that the president is guilty of obstruction, that his staff is guilty of obstruction. All of them are guilty of lying, and I think that's pretty much a foregone conclusion. And I just don't understand why we put up with a government like that. Now, I hear some of you out there saying, oh, they're all corrupt. I don't believe that. When I ran for office, and I'm just a nobody, but when I ran for office, my pact with myself was I would never lie, and I would do what I believed was right for all people, or at least what was the best for all people. Some things are not right for some people, and they're right for other people, but I would try to walk down the middle of that road. And if asked why I did something, I was going to tell the honest truth. That is not being done, period. And the Mueller report proves it. And if you read the Mueller report, you will no longer have a lot of respect for this particular administration. And I know there are people, I have great friends that really think this administration is fine and they're doing a good job. And I know those people have not read the Mueller report. I also know that I'm not always right on what I believe. And I know that there are probably mistakes in the Mueller report. And I'm sure that there are people that will totally disagree with me. But I will guarantee you those people that disagree with me have not read the Mueller report. As a matter of fact, I find it very difficult to believe that our Republican Senate, those people who are stonewalling anything, I can't believe that most of those people have actually read the Mueller report. Or maybe they just have no honor. Okay, I know. I'm going way far. I try not to get as far to the left as sometimes I feel. I know you, there are people out there listening right now that are saying, Glenn, you're a fool. But if you've read the Mueller report and you say that, then I need to reread it. I've only, like I said, I'm about 90% done. And it's taken a long time, and I only do it at certain, you know, a few hours, or not even a few hours. I do it about an hour a day when I'm have the opportunity. So I've got a ways to go. I probably have another 2 hours to read, I will apologize to anybody if I come to the end of the thing and say, oh, I was really wrong on that. Well, anyway, I hope you do get a chance to read that. I hope you get a chance to say hi to your dad. I hope your dad's alive. Mine's been passed for, you know, 40-some years. And my mom actually passed away after she was, I think, 74 or 5, something like that. I am currently the oldest Coble left in my family line, I believe, unless my cousin Ricky is still alive. And everybody on the Smith side of my family is that's older than me is deceased, I believe. We have Smiths on one side, Bowmans on another side, Cobles, and apparently Mendenhouse, which makes me related distantly to one of my least favorite presidents, Mr. Nixon. I'm glad I'm having the opportunity before I pass on to watch the way the world and the United States is handling this. I hope that we can do the right thing, and I hope that we can all come together. I know it's not possible to come together now, And I'm pretty sure it's not possible to come together after we no longer have Mr. Trump as a president. And I'm not sure whether that'll be in 20 or 24. But I hope we can find a way to get back to where we were after D-Day, which was 75 years ago, where all people got together. I'm certain there were a lot of people, well, like my grandfather, who hated Roosevelt. I'm sure he didn't become a Democrat because the World War was over and his best friend was a Democrat. He did not. And I'm sure that there were lots of political disagreements. But the world, or the United States, united in its desire to be a better country, united in its desire to do away with war, which we apparently, I think I read a while back that we had only had 24 years in the entire lifetime of the United States of America. We had only had 24 years where we were totally at peace with everybody in the world. That's kind of a shame. If that doesn't tell you something about mankind, I don't know. My feeling is that we are all animals, and alpha animals will want to take over. Beta animals will allow it, and the ones below that will just be cannon fodder for everybody else. I believe that animals do what's best for themselves and could care less about anything else. Now, it's true, they run in packs, and that's kind of what we're doing right now. We're running in packs. Those on one side and those on the other totally separated and believe the other side is totally wrong. My father always said that that there is good in all, and there might be a Jeffrey Dahmer out there or a few others, Hitler or something like that, that don't have a whole lot of redeeming grace. But there is goodness in most of us, 99.9% of us. There is goodness in all of us, and I think we should look for that first. That was one thing my mom always said to me. She said that there is always goodness in people, and if you look for it, you can find it. I believe that. I truly believe that there is goodness in all of us. And turning the other cheek is something that was done rotely in the Coble family. And it's not a sign of weakness. It's actually a sign of strength. If you stop and think about it, it's a lot stronger to be able to turn the other cheek. Well, I hope you have a good week, and I'll talk to you next Monday. You've been listening to A Progressive Life.
LP, Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. From legendary talk show host, actor, broadcaster, and comedian Charles Grodin.
You know what I'm impressed by? You think I would know this, how you have all this audio.
Oh, you're impressed by this?
Well, what do you do, just tape it, tape the shows as they go? But you're going back 10 years now, or maybe longer in certain cases.
Charles, when you were on, I made sure to tape it.
Wow, isn't that something? Where are you from originally?
I'm right here in Ohio.
Where? No, I mean, you weren't born where you're working now, or were you?
Do you work for the Internal Revenue Service or something?
I refuse to answer on the grounds.
Yes, I was born right here, Charles. I never went anywhere.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you like it?
Sure.
Yeah, I liked it too. So how long have you had this show?
This show?
Yeah.
This particular incarnation of this show has been on about a year, but doing these type of shows about 10 years.
10 years. And
is that good enough? Do I pass?
Oh, yeah. And you enjoy it, right?
Till today, yeah.
Well, you know, there's nothing like, for someone like you or someone like me, somebody who likes to talk,